Hello, friend. Welcome to the Watery The Show podcast. We are so happy to have the pleasure of your company. If this is your first time listening, sit back, relax. We hope you enjoy. If you are coming back because you enjoy our content and you'd like to support us, you can go to our Patreon at www.patreon.com/WateryDesho. We've got all kinds of fun rewards and bonus content like early access, Discord roles, additional audio and video content, all in three budget-friendly tiers. If you're not able to support us financially, no biggie, we totally understand. If you'd like to help us out for free, you can always give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, which helps our discoverability. You can follow us on SoundCloud, on Twitter, at WateryDeshow. You can always send us an email at WateryDeshow@gmail.com if you want to correspond with us. We may not get to read every correspondence on the show, but I can promise you that we do read and try to respond to every single one, because we do love our community, which we hope you'll be a part of. Thank you for your kind attention, friend, and without further ado, let's get to the show. Hello, welcome, ladies, gentlemen, and envies to Watery Desho's Stream of Thought. We're back. Back again.
I told you these bars could not contain me.
Never.
Although, to be fair, while you haven't seen it, we do have a private video each week that's been going up on YouTube. And it's just been me, sat in a corner, throwing a baseball and going, bum, 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 bum. Yeah, we're out of YouTube prison at long last. Mm-hmm.
That's right. We're free. We're free YouTube people to cause more trouble and get banned again.
it's not a question of if, it's a question of when.
It's back. We're going to do Master of Martial Arts again.
Oh, God.
And see how it goes. No, that's never happening.
Keep trying until eventually they don't notice anymore. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. I am the subtle doctor. I don't know if I said that before, but I remain the subtle doctor.
Really?
I haven't changed.
I thought jail changes a man. I thought you were gonna come out with a new prison name. what's your prison name now? Is it Bob or something?
It's, I don't know, Hard T. We'll go with
Hard T. Sure. Okay, fair enough.
Mm-hmm. Above me in your video is my main squeeze from prison. It is the hardest working man in pod business, Shadon. Welcome, Shadon.
I don't remember that particular version of events happening in YouTube jail.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Great. Fantastic.
Aye. Well, Shadon is here, I'm here, the Vikings are here, we're all here together, and we're here to talk about Vinland Saga, Episode 19, A United Front, and...
It only took them 19 episodes to finally be united.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they've all come together, all the good blonde boys. Thank you. Thank you, Big Bang. We're happy to be back, I guess.
We are absolutely happy to be back, despite the fact that YouTube is... how do I put this politely? Shite-ass. There we go. That's a good phrase.
Yes.
I'm just throwing that out there, by the way, because I'm hoping that their new YouTube for kids detection algorithm picks up and marks us as not appropriate for kids.
We're marked. We are marked manually in the admin console. I have put a big old check next to the not for kids.
I thought my big potty mouth would have given that away first, but you can never tell with YouTube. It gets things a bit backwards all the time.
The robots are bad. They're bad there.
Well, they're robots. I mean, did no one ever watch 80s action films? But, post-apocalyptic films and all that. Did that never happen?
I don't know if we're, as a channel, ready to come out and say robots are bad. universally. I'm not sure if I'm ready to go there. I think I need some more time. I think we as a species need time with robots to figure out, like, whether or not there are some good ones among them.
Nah, kill them all. I'm making
for all you know, there may be robots among us now. I may be one, and you may be passing judgment upon me, your friend, in your ignorance. What say you to this?
Are you gonna? You've got to pass the Turing test first, Doc. Give it a go.
I can't. So I know I've heard of the Turing test. What is the Turing test?
Can a robot plausibly be mistaken or identified as a human?
Put it on the poll.
Is it? Can, oh yeah. You know what? Let's get started. No time like the present.
Oh boy. Hello, Yukinon, our artist buddy. Welcome. I don't think Yukinon. I can't. I don't think Yukinon is watching Vinland Saga, but he's still here to support us anyway. And for that, bless you, sir. Bless you, Yuki. We haven't forgotten the Norman deer and all the other amazing things that you drew. The ski free art of the Promised Neverland. Oh, you are watching.
That was a blessed moment. The ski free art.
Good. It's the best.
And it's funny because it's accurate. It's accurate to the show.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Mm-hmm. So, anyway.
I don't blame you for falling off for a while. Because it's... I really like this show, but it is very fall-offable. A certain kind of point in the middle there. Where if you're doing it week on week, I totally understand how you might be like, I'm gonna prioritize other things for the next few weeks here. But we're glad to have you back. Back on board the good ship Vinland Weekly Discussion. Excuse me. So, let's get into it now. Episode 19. Before we do, you know, the summary, and I remind us all of what happened in episode 19, Shadan is going to remind us of the Twitter polls that took place for episode 18.
That I am indeed. I've just also posted a link in the chat for the first and probably most important poll of the entire podcast lifetime. Is Doc actually a robot? Like, you know...
Do I pass the test?
Are you going to have Harrison Ford or Ryan Gosling try and hunt you down? Make you do the Voight Kampff test? How do you feel about turtles, Doc? There's a question.
Oh, the Voight Kampff test. Turtles.
How do you feel about that?
Glitch. I love turtles.
All right. So, polls from last time. Episode 18, poll number one. Are you a true fighting game fan if you've never played Clay Fighter? I hadn't played it, so I just put yes. One. But people disagree with that. 29% said yes, 71% said no. I still have no fucking clue what it is. Like, it's got Clay and it's got fighters in it. That's all I know.
Please play it. Get on the emulator.
I got
play it.
I got things to do, like, you know, meeting women for, like, you know, afternoon tea and painting fine art.
It's not
what the fuck do you think I do in my spare time?
It's not a Fallout game. It'll take you like 10 minutes to get the feel of Clay Fighter. It's not like you need to pour hours and hours into open world questing. You just, you know, pick bad Mr. Frosty and fight blue suede goo. And
Christ.
Then you get it.
Yeah, this guy. No wonder everyone thinks he's a robot, am I right? By the end of this podcast, I'm going to make everyone believe you are a robot. Anyway, episode 18, poll number 2. Did you tear up when Canute said he wished he was Ragnar's son? 78% said yes, and 22% violating health and safety procedures by cooking while listening to our podcast because they said they were cutting up onions. Why are you doing that? Come on, folks. You know, you got to keep your attention focused on things. You can't just be there, like, you know, looking at the person. Hey, that's shame. There's a handsome guy. Ah, my finger! Don't do that. Just
I don't know how people do the streaming themselves cooking. Like, that's a tough one. I'm already bad enough at whatever you want to call what we do here, but, like, the cooking thing, I would definitely, like, cause an accident.
$10 patrons here for us now, cooking with Shadan. It's all awful shit, but, you know, this is how you put a ready meal in the microwave. It's a 4.5 minute long podcast. It's great. Anyway.
The macaroni and cheese edition.
Yeah, I'm not even a fan of that shit. Anyway, Vinland Saga episode 18, poll number 3. Is Thorfinn just in a rebellious phase. I suppose this also could technically count for Kel as well, come to think, because he really is a child in a man's body. But anyway, 79% Umbug Assassin. Umbug Assassin has been in a rebellious phase, you know? And 21% say no. And episode 18, poll number 4, is the priest right with respect to his views on, like, you know, love, you know, being a kind of discrimination? This was quite close. 48% said he's onto something, and 52% said he's off his rocker, i.e. pissed out of his face. Because that's the priest one.
That's how I voted.
Come to think of it, we don't see the priest in this episode, actually.
Is he taking care of his kid?
I think he's burying it. Either that
building
or
a new one?
No, he's gone to the orphanage to adopt a new one, by which I, of course, mean the local pub.
Right. The pub has a very high adoption rate, I think. That's the rate of success.
Think of a kid real cheap there.
Well, 1-to-1, like 100%.
This is my new son. He's named Stout.
Funnily enough, that's the name of my last son. The one before that.
I've had many sons, and they've all died a tragic death. I can't say why. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to finish this one off. Oh no, it happened again! Yeah, the priest has, like, his main defining attribute is the fact that he's just an alcoholic. But anyway, that's all the polls from last episode. Thank you very much to everyone who took time. There'll be more coming along at this point. If you've already put in your 2 cents about whether or not Doc is indeed a robot, then the spoilers, the answer is yes. Please click that button. See? He's trying to, like, you know, trick us by pretending to be a person doing a robot, but in reality he's a robot being
it's a
person
a double
doing...
faint.
Yeah.
Right.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Like, I mean...
Am I that transparent? God, I need to update my algorithm.
Have you never seen Isaac Asimov's Laws of Robotics? Like, first, you know, do no harm to humans. Why are you doing this to us, Doc? Come on.
That's I am. You know, if I was a robot, I wouldn't have been able to do that facsimile of a dance. Because that was indeed harmful to human beings. It was a first law breaking dance. Well, thank you for updating the polls, Shadon. If you want to vote on the polls as they come out, at What Are We Dead Show on Twitter.
Indeed.
They will be there. And they'll be up there for a week. So don't feel like because you missed the stream, if you're watching on demand, that you can't vote. What Are We Dead Show on Twitter to vote.
In it.
So, episode 19, Kyoto, United Front. I didn't know that's what Kyoto meant. That's interesting. Not a lot of time we really have to spend on creatives here because we've talked about all of them before. We got the writing duo as usual, Hiroshi Seko, our boy, and Kete Hara. And we have, once again, this episode has two directors. Since episode 17, there have been... Well, this happened back in episode 10, but then there was a single director for a while. But since, like, the last 3 weeks, 17, 18, 19, there's been at least two, on one occasion three, episode directors.
Mm-hmm.
Was that just
so they could give each other piggybacks when they were bored?
It's clearly. So,
like, only waste one of the studio,
them,
am I right?
One of them can, like, lie down and get an IV while the other one stays up for 3 straight days working. And that's probably not that far from the truth. But yeah, we have Yoji Sato and Michiru Itabashi. The font. It's a tiny font on my screen. Itabisashi. Gosh. Okay. So, like I said, we've talked about these folks before because we have seen them in the director's chair. Sato directed episode 2, episode 5, and episode 12 before this week.
Do you reckon they allocated these episodes on, like, some sort of bingo or, like, you know, lottery? All right.
Mm-hmm.
We're now drawing the ticket number for episode 5, and that's number 136. Come on down.
It's probably people just doing other things in the studio, yeah. And they're like, well, this week, why don't you give it a go?
I mean, last week I directed an episode, and this week they've just had me fix the fax machine. What's going on here?
No, surely not. Ita Bisashi directed episode 4, episode 9, and episode 15, and was one of the three directors on episode 17. So Michiru has gotten quite a bit of work. So look up those videos on YouTube or those podcasts in SoundCloud if you want to hear us talk about the previous work, the resumes of those folks. Don't want to necessarily belabor the point by going over it again. So lots of, you know, Vinland veterans doing the Vinland this week. All right, are we ready now to go into summary land and talk about what happened this episode? Shadon, are you ready?
Punch it.
Here we go. So, the beginning of episode 19, Thorfinn wakes up to realize he has a broken arm, and Askeladd wants to be his corner man. And then we get the OP. We have Thorkell telling Thorfinn about his dad. In previous episodes, he said, "I'll tell you more if you entertain me." Mm-hmm. And he said, Thorkell has been thoroughly entertained. He says, "Look, I'll tell you." And he tells him, "Hey, guess what? I'm your great uncle.
And your dad was a pussy."
Right? Yep, that's
it. He was a complete pussy.
Completely. What,
turned tail,
not what he says
turned tail and ran. What a complete and utter wimp.
No, he actually like really sings the praises of the guy. You know, says like, when he died, I was weeping and was pissed off, and you know, a little while later, was it? I guess 3 weeks later, he was like sleeping on the roof, the roof of Thor's house.
He really had a totally difficult time getting over it.
Totally drunk. I mean, it's just the sleeping on the roof of his house, like.
You know, now that I'm a homeowner, by the way, YouTube only folks, welcome to my new digs, as it were. Same digs as before, just different room in the house, the actual main one. I'm going to make that my goal now, that when I get absolutely pissed up on a night out soon, potentially even this weekend, I want to wake up one morning and just find myself thinking, where the fuck am I? Why am I sleeping on slanted tiles? Oh, fuck.
So I recall when we talked about Kabukicho Sherlock.
Oh, God.
Episode.
You recall
when Kobayashi woke up in the garbage. You were like, yeah, I've done that before.
Yeah, I've woken up in strange places, let's put it that way, folks.
But so you like to wake up on your own roof?
Well, I'll give it a try, see how it goes. Maybe that'll happen if I can't get in one night, you know, I've lost my keys or something. Ah, this is comfortable enough, it'll do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Totally. Shingles, very like warming, the shingles. Is your roof shingled?
Tiled.
Okay.
I would say shingles is something else entirely in this country, and I definitely don't want that.
Well, so shingles are a thing, of course, like the medical thing, but they also are these very rough black squares that many houses, at least here where I am, are roofed with. You know, I guess they help keep heat out and such like. But yeah, I've helped to re-roof a house before, so that's why I know. For charity, when I was a kid.
Well, try to be good at my home. If ever I need my house re-roofing, I know who to ask.
No, it's been so long. Also, I would just turn you down. Just be like, nope, fuck you, dude. Not doing it. It sucks.
You see this guy? You see this... Prick here, like won't even fly across the ocean. Won't even fly across the ocean to redo my roof. I'm appalled by this behavior.
I'm the worst. So, yeah. Anyway, Thorkell, right? He catches Thor's trying to abscond away with his own wife and child, and leave the Jomsvikings forever. Thorkell, you know, it's like, yo, buddy, I love you. Ah, come on, come inside, like, have a drink. Or just like, nope, I'm peacing out, and...
I'm driving. No, he's driving.
That's right, exactly. No, sorry, but no can do, driving.
Designated driver.
DD, yep, that's me. So, Thorkell kind of finally gets it, like, oh, he's really leaving, right? And it's when Thor tells him, you know, because Thor tells, like, why? Like, why are you going? It's like, I understand what a real warrior is, and I can't stay here. Thorkell is very, like, nonplussed, very, like, what? Like, this is the warrior paradise, right?
He's like, I'm going to talk about this later, but he's all very, like, he just doesn't get it. He doesn't pass it. He just, Thor's, like, might as well be speaking in a foreign language to him at this particular point. Like, yeah. As if every word he just says, like that.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to turn you up a little bit, Shadon. You've been a little quiet, I think. So I've turned you up.
Crank me up, lad. Crank me up.
So, yeah. And Thorkell, as you say, like, I understand what a true warrior is, right? That, I think he wrestled with that for a long, long time afterward. But he basically tries to fight Thor's. The only thing he kind of, the only way he can respond to something, right? Mm-hmm. I'm gonna fight you. And Thor's, like, punches the head off his axe, essentially. Blocks a blow so hard that the axe head comes flying off. And then they leave him. And
after knocking him out, no less.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, this episode does a lot of nice little things with details, and that is, believe it or not, the first of two times Thorkell's one weakness is set up.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which is really, really neat. I like that.
Really
a lot.
Good. That actually is a nice attention to detail. Hello, Dana. Welcome. So, let's see. So, yeah, Thorkell finishes kind of telling his story, and he says, like, you know, your dad left, and I thought about him for 15 years. Right up until he died, I kept thinking about him. And, you know, when I learned he had died, it occurred to me that, and this I thought was really great. He said, like, whether the body is alive or dead when it comes to, like, a warrior, that doesn't matter. What's important for a warrior is where their soul lives. And it's like Thor's soul had left his body and learned to be a true warrior somewhere else. And I was like, oh, that's all very mysterious and cool sounding. I really enjoyed that. So then Askeladd, you know, re-enters the show. And he's like, hey, I'm going to tell you how to beat Thorkell.
I've looked it up on IGN. I've covered the walkthrough.
That's right. I consulted Game Facts. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen a couple of Let's Plays. I think I got this now. You know, don't open that chest. It's a mimic. It will kill you.
Make sure to quick save. I mean, look at the state you're in right now. You didn't even fucking quick save before you took this fight on. What are you doing? What are you doing?
Use the item dupe bug to craft some more daggers.
Mm-hmm.
But no, he bandages up the kid and is like very much like, look, you know, don't you want to like live to fight me? You know, it's appealing.
I love how much of a fucking snake Askeladd is here, because he basically says, like, if you win, I live. And here's the thing, right? Like, I love the double meaning of that, because not only does it mean Thorkell won't kill him, but he feels such a cocksure prick that he thinks, oh, well, Thorfinn's never going to be able to kill me.
No. You know? And like, yet again.
Double meaning.
Yet again, he finds himself, Thorfinn, fighting to save this guy who he wants to kill. He's just been doing it forever, and even now, still doing it.
Most twisted reinterpretation of the bodyguard I've ever seen.
I know. So, yeah, Askeladd gives Thorfinn the game genie. And and he says, this is interesting, like, you know, where he says, battle's not shogi.
That was really neat. Isn't shogi a Japanese game, or am I misremembering?
It is.
Why is he mentioning that? Are you telling me that Askeladd has been all the way around the world that far?
That's what a slip.
That is a bit of an odd one.
He did. We met a trader who played it, maybe like a trade ship, or maybe he sailed there. I don't think so, though. I think chess probably should have been the go-to game there. Mm-hmm. But no, that wouldn't have been right, because if you take a king in chess, you do win. So hell, man. but battle's not shogi. Mysterious, he downloaded shogi from the Matrix, clearly. Lloyd says he can guarantee that wasn't in the manga. It probably was not. I would feel pretty good about that. What game should it have been? What are the board games?
Well, I wonder what the next poll I'm going to be putting up will be.
Oh, man. So, basically, Asklad's like, look, I saw what happened on the battlefield one day when we were both still in the Jomsvikings. The invincible Thorkell fell, and I witnessed it. I saw it, and I'm going to tell you so you can replicate what happened, because we're in this really unique kind of circumstance where if you beat him in single combat, we live. So, Thorfinn kicks Thorkell in the neck, and he collapses.
The glass jaw. Who'd have thought that Thorkell had a glass jaw?
Mm-hmm. I know.
Seriously. Like, my God. And he was only like kicked by a tiny child as well. It's not like he got hit by an MMA fighter. But yeah, this is the weak spot that was alluded to both by Askeladd's flashback and Thorkell's own flashback with Thors.
Was it the jaw? I thought it was the neck for some reason. I could have been
wrong. Jaw, neck, same area. It's mm-hmm. close enough.
Yeah,
that it doesn't
right
really
around.
Matter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So so he like folds up like a cheap tent. And then Thorfinn is like on him. Mm-hmm. And like it's gouging his eye out. Just screaming, you know, and Askeladd's like, no, you don't have a weapon. Take this knife. And suddenly, like, Thorkell's, like, troops are there. His second in command has him subdued and is basically like, well, time to die, kid. This has been fun, but, you know, let's now get this over with. And Thorkell screams, you know, the scream of an angry demon here. And his hair is blown out.
Were you just about to start quoting Tenacious D then?
No. No, there's is that a Tenacious D line?
There side shined a shiny demon. I feel like I should make like the cover of that just applies to Vinland Saga, but man.
Thorkell at this point looks like Broly if Broly lost his razor. Like his hair is all Broly'd out. Mm. You know, he's got like the closed eye with a bunch of blood. And he's just looks crazy, and his voice starts sounding different, especially when you hear his own inner thoughts.
Yeah, he's
like,
also
a lot less playful. I'm Thorkell, and it's more like
well, a lot less Barney the Dinosaur.
Uh huh. Right. Yeah.
Like, yeah. That is. I mean, he also
hey guys, has, I'm Thorkell.
Do you want to play war with me?
To play war, and I just mean the card game where we flip over the cards to see which has the higher number. Will you count with me?
I mean, for a guy who had his eye just poked out, he's actually handling things very well, I must say.
Oh, yeah, like when his fingers get cut off, he doesn't give a shit.
I mean, but Thorfinn, like, not only did he knock him out, he then decided he would go for the, you know, like... like, dude, overkill, man. I mean, if this was a video game, you would have started trying to teabag him. Because that's what you do in first-person shooters when you're being a shit.
I know. Unfortunately, I know. Do you know I regret to this day, like, I taught my little brother-in-law how to do that? It's a deep regret I have. Like,
of all the shit I'd expected to learn today.
I was not ready. I was not ready for... Go back. Let's go back to the Turing test poll, folks.
I'm very sad about it, because, like, we were all playing Halo Combat Evolved. And
come by Vol, so, where everyone starts teabagging. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like back at the like it was local and like just goofing around. I did that, and then yes, I communicated the forbidden knowledge to him, and mm-hmm. Yeah, he was probably like 13 at the time. It's
I feel really bad about it.
And oh,
I just felt so good to get the kill, man.
Has he ever been the same since?
Never been the same. Never been the same. He's in Austin being a graphic artist, making a lot of money.
What, to draw people teabagging each other?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Still drawing Master Chief, squatting over other people.
Well, that was
a lucrative career.
That was a moment of revelation.
So, all right. Yes. Where were we? Thorfinn is subdued. Thorkell says, no, we're not going to do this. And he basically goes into position to snap the neck of his second in command. The second man, I can't remember his name. It's like
Asgir.
Asgir? So Asgir is like, look, you know, kill me. That's fine. Whatever happens, yeah. You need to live because you unify all these people, and I can't do that. No one can do that. What's important is you stay alive. So at that point, Canute, the master chef. Cooking master boy himself comes onto the scene. He rolls up.
And he's definitely going to stir some shit right here now.
Yes, exactly. He's going to stir the pot. Indeed. He's adding the secret ingredient, Canute, is what makes it.
He's got some spicy takes to give to you all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So also in this scene, right before Canute starts talking, we learn that like the bro that wears his hair down is officially an amnesiac, at least for now.
Nah, he's just having his hard drive reformatted. I mean, we established previously that you've got blue screen. You've got to wipe the disk and reinstall Windows 10 from scratch. You've got to make sure you do it right. Although maybe they won't put Linux on his brain. Who can say? I mean, you'd know, Doc. You're a robot. You can tell me if he's going to pass the Turing test after he's rebooted.
I'm going to say no. I think he's
well, that's what a robot would say.
Yeah.
Pretending to be a human. They would say no, he wouldn't pass the Turing test.
We're going to know he's a replicant. Definitely. And I know, that's right.
So that's right, that's right, Sophie.
We're here.
We broke out of YouTube jail.
It's pretty good.
I knitted together many, many bed sheets to climb out of the window. Took a while. Oh, no, even better than that. I made like a papier-mâché mannequin of myself, you know. Escape from Alcatraz style, you can't go wrong with a classic.
So, I guess your prison name then would be Rapunzel.
Oh, that's the deepest fucking cut. You prick. Do you see this? You didn't just fucking go there. Oh my god.
It's like the dual meaning of like someone famous with for the hair and also the sheets out the window for
climbing. Can't for fucking climbing. Believe this. You
were so mean. I didn't even...
you're getting fucking shanked.
Hard T goes down, loses to Rapunzel.
He's got a hard L coming on there. Fuck my life.
Oh my god. I love you, Shadon. Mwah.
Get back in your corner, robot.
Canute. Someone who's not a robot. Canute. So he like faces up to everybody, does not lose his cool, you know, says, look, I'm going to go to the main camp in Gainsborough. I'm going to fight my dad. That's what has to be done. And Thorfinn and Askeladd are my followers. And you too can follow me if you wish.
For the low contribution of $14.99 per month, you too can find salvation in the Church of Canute.
Exactly. Please send all your donations to my PayPal. And, like, so Thorkell at first is a little skeptical, but once he learns, he's, you know, kind of susses it out in his head, right? He's like, oh, he's fighting King Swain. I'm fighting King Swain. But
the enemy of my enemy is my, yes, friend. Let's go.
So he has this moment where he, like, looks into his eyes and he sees the eyes of Thor's. And this is interesting because he did not see that same look in Thorfinn's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
He was making fun of him. And he's like, you don't have the mystery or whatever. I don't know. He made the Simpsons face at him. And, you know.
You know, when you say Simpsons face, all I could imagine then was there's that episode where Lisa and Bart are fighting where they're doing the windmill. Like, if you get hit, it's not my fault. I can just imagine Thorkell doing that in an actual fight.
I can too. I'm sure he's done it a fair few times. So, he looks into his eyes and does Thorfinn into the eyes of Canute, sees Thor's eyes and says, like, I hate that look in his eyes. You know, I've seen it before.
It's where a warrior's soul has gone elsewhere.
I hate it so much that I'm going to join him. So, and he admits to all his people, it's like, men, I don't know why he's sharing this with everyone. He's like, I too have a regret. I regret not following Thor's then when he left.
I love that they got him a chair for this, by the way, so he could sit down. Story time with Uncle Thorkell.
Yes.
Yeah. Let me tell you all a tale. It was about that time Uncle I was a bit... It was about the time, you know, I was a bit stupid and didn't quite grasp what was in front of me.
Indeed.
I mean, to be fair, though, Thorkell is well on his way to becoming big boss at this point. You know, he's lost his eye. You know, he wants a world in which soldiers can fight forever.
He does want that world.
I'm just saying, like, all the signs are there.
So does that mean that David Hayter is going to play him in the dub? We can only hope.
The problem is that Thorkell doesn't have nearly enough, like, declarative statements, like, you know, Thorfinn, Canute, Battle of London.
He is dummy thick.
Viking gear.
So he has that going for him.
Oh my god.
He's dummy thick. He's the thick daddy Thorkell.
He is a robot. So he's totally a robot.
Beep. So he tells, you know, them, like, I regret not following him, so I'm going to do this now. But Canute, if you do anything soft, I'm coming for you. I'm going to kill you. Right? And then, because he cannot stand to be upstaged, Askeladd slides in there,
fucking snake that he is.
I know. He did like the golden eye, like where you slide halfway across the room on one knee, all the way up.
At least it's not teabagging anyone.
No. So he's like up there and offers his sword to the king, Canute, and you know, it's like, look, it's me. Also, before that, he started laughing as if his firmware had been, you know.
Well, that's because because his gamble has paid off magnificently. All of the men who turned against him are dead. He's still alive.
What a genius!
It all worked out in the end.
God.
And here he is telling Canute, "Oh yeah, by the way, do you all know who killed Ragnar?
Your boy,
me,
Askeladd.
Me. I was smiling all the way while I was doing it. Loved every second of it. You know what? They didn't even have to pay me to do it. There you go." But the genius thing about Askeladd's plan, by the way, is that he then says, you can kill me if you want. And here's the thing. He's just seen how far Thorfinn would go to stop someone else from killing him first.
Ooh, he does have that backup plan.
Yeah,
right.
And here's the thing, right? Thorfinn, he couldn't kill Thorkell, really. He struggled mightily. But I think that if he was asked to kill Canute, he would probably make quick work of him. So...
Let's hope so.
At this point, he's basically just that person who, like, gets involved in a bar fight, but he manages to get people fighting each other, and then he just slips out. He's such a conniving little shit.
Yes,
and I love
it.
It's the point where you can just go up to and say, yeah, I did kill him. You can kill me if you want. I secretly know you're not going to.
And the whole, like, before that, Thorfinn, for a while, is like, and Haskell's just like, no, watch. Like, because he knows. Like, he can feel in his bones. Like, it's about to, like, totally play out the way that he wants it to, right? So, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Al. He totally does it, like, as a gesture to gain the trust of his king so he can, you know, be like, I've been totally honest with you. I've laid it all out. And, you know, and two, I think you're right, Shadon, that he knows Thorfinn would jump in there to try to protect him. But I think he also feels like at this stage, Canute probably can't kill him, like in public in front of everyone. I don't know, but for some reason, it feels like he's done this at a point where
maybe he's getting too cocky.
The most protected, the most safe. Maybe so. But, you know, he's like, I've done this. I've killed your dad. And you can kill me, but if you don't kill me, I'll lay down my life for you. And Canute gets a little pissed. You can tell on his face. He's looking
pretty Tea. He's got that look of when you come back home from a day at work and you find that your dog's there and it's just taking a shit on your rug. Bad Askeladd. Bad Askeladd.
Sophie, killing me in chat. Canute, colon, crouching Christian, hidden dragon.
It's true.
Unbelievable.
It's incredible.
What a statement. That's like a great tweet right there. Only not done on Twitter. But yeah, so he really just is furious with the guy. But, you know, that's kind of also a little test for his newfound, like, beliefs, his newfound resolve, and, like, what love is, and what faith is, and what he feels like his new mission in life is. Like, he's not, he doesn't have that kind of attachment to Ragnar. Or at least, he can't, he's not supposed to, but he can't help but
feeling
it.
He's not going
to
let it get in the way of using Askeladd as, like, a useful pawn.
Yeah, he's able to, like, stuff it down.
He's clearly got some skill and talent, Askeladd, so he might as well use him for that.
Mm-hmm, yeah. By the way, say the word pawn again.
Pawn.
Oh, so funny. Because... what? I'm sorry.
Are you really sure you're not a robot? Is that like your kill phrase?
No. It's just that when folks from Manchester, or most British places, I think, say the word pawn, it sounds like...
I know what yet.
So, and there was like a, I saw like a video about.
Well, to be fair, Doc, I do visit the pawn shop quite a lot.
if there were a large assortment of chess pieces that are the least good chess pieces, and they're all kind of gathered together in one central area, you might call it a pawn hub. Am I right? Yeah, I know, Yuki, I'm sorry. I'm a fucking idiot, basically, is what the segment comes down to.
I was just that close to having all of my blood vessels in my brain just bursting and just start trickling out my nose.
Sorry.
Again, totally a robot. He's a killbot, no less.
It's true. So, Askeladd is allowed to join the service of Canute.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically says, you know... You killed Ragnar, but...
My name is Viggo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
No, he doesn't go that route. He says, we're going to Rurouni Kenshin this, right? Like, you are going to mourn him. You're going to atone and repent for killing him by serving to the best of your ability. That'll be how you make recompense to him and to me, is that you work your ass off for my cause. And he walks away from the battle, and the three blonde Viking, you know, protag type characters are all on the same side. The chessboard is flipped, like the pieces have been rearranged. Some of them are now different colors. And yeah, we got ourselves a fucking super team, a super Viking team. You know, WWE, the just had their Survivor Series, and...
quite literally.
You could go to war with this Survivor Series team, Canute, Askeladd, Thorkell, and Thorfinn. That's your big four. The blondies. The Hollywood blondes. The Viking beastmen. They're all together on the same side. It's great. I love it.
Canute's free. Canute's four.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Right.
Yep.
The four horsemen of the apocalypse.
It can't be understated, though, if you think about it. Like, Canute has managed to... Like, he was initially, at the start of this episode, Thorkell's, like, target to be used for, like, you know, profit. Mm-hmm. And now he's managed to turn Thorkell into his servant to, you know, get revenge or unseat his father from the throne. Like, that's a natural 20 roll on your charisma check right there. Holy shit.
Yeah, that's like a only I can do this. This is not like a thing you could battle plan for, which is great, which I love. Which is originally, I sort of felt like what the meaning of battle is not shogi was, but then it became this whole thing about the king. But I think that, yeah, like that you can't just play out these things on paper because some people are really special and some interactions you can't plan for.
Mm-hmm. But he, again, uses his own nature as the king perceives him to, you know, tell Farkel the truth. And Farkel, for all that he is a kid in a big guy's body, like, he's not an idiot, which is something I'll be getting to in a minute. I don't think he's stupid per se.
No.
I think that he is very childlike, certainly, but I think that he... Well, I'll get into that shortly, but yeah.
Okay, well, that's the episode, though. I mean, that's Kyoto, United Front, and... Now we'll get into the discussion section.
Okay.
And I'll kick it over to you.
All right, then. So, let's talk about Farkel and Fawz in the flashback scene here for a moment. Because if there's one thing the show hasn't up until this point impressed, or maybe it has, but it's not felt very strongly to me personally, is how difficult the choice was that Fawz made to leave his old life behind. And this episode shows that in great detail here with that flashback, because pay attention to all of Farkel's responses when Fawz says that he's leaving. Pay attention to how he reacts. Every single time that Fawz, like, look how Fawz is dressed. He's wearing a cloak and a hood on. He's trying not to be noticed. He's there with his wife and his daughter, Ilva, you know? And just, like, you know, Farkel's like, you know, be quiet and all that. Like, sorry, Farkin's like, sorry, Fawz, getting tongue-tied. Blech. Let's start that again. There's too many Fawz in this group, you know. Just saying. But Fawz is like, you know, trying to obviously keep a low profile as we see it, but Farkel can't read that. He can't pass it, and he can't pass the implications of what Fawz is trying to do. And indeed, he says, like, you know, this is the warrior's capital. No one leaves.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that Farkel is so stupid that he can't recognize that, it's because he's so indoctrinated in his brain from the life he's led as a warrior under the Jomsvikings. He can't foresee, he can't understand a different perspective, a different way of living. And that, to me, just shows, like, how ingrained this culture and this, you know, expectation of performing in battle was on Fawz, Farkel, and all the other Jomsvikings. And again, it ties back into Vinland Saga's overarching, like, you know, idea of cycles and, like, breaking free. It makes it very clear how difficult it was for Fawz to do that. Like, how it, all that time, like, he was, like, even back in the first episode when we saw that flashback, how, like, robotic he was in there, you know, how unemotional he was in getting involved in the battle. So I really appreciate all the pains that the episode took with that scene to show Farkel as this kind of, like, indoctrinated, unthinking soldier who can't perceive a life outside of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it just then goes to, you know, help highlight how difficult it was for Fawz to make that choice and break free from that. To break free from this kind of ingrained cultural, you know, zeitgeist of, like, of warfare as a normal existence.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, one other thing I want to know about that scene, again, this is credits this episode's, like, level of detail. When Fawz says, "I've learned what it means to be a true warrior," we get a cut from him saying that to a picture, sorry, to a shot of Ilva in Helga's arms and then back again. And that is, you know, classic cooler shot effect stuff. We're making meaning from combining shots together. Mm-hmm. It's the good example of the Darling in the Franxx example when, you know, they had that shot where it's like, and the future is children. And of course, you know, like, we're looking after, we're going to the future. Oh, here's this shot of the pregnant one. I wonder what that might mean. I wonder, Mr. Yeah. You know, no political messages in my show. Fuck off. Anyway. So, yeah, that was a really good note there. And that scene was... It was great for fleshing out a character who, at this point, you might argue has served his purpose. But they keep going back to Fawz in new and interesting ways. And also giving Farkel more dimension to his character, rather than him just simply being the, you know, the, well, the Looney Tunes character that he's been portrayed as thus far.
Yeah. Yeah, it was almost like when he got kicked in the neck / jaw... You know, and got his eye. It's like the mask kind of came off. Like, he stopped kind of coasting, and he was like, I don't know. It's like he was able to be gotten through to. And like I said, you could hear more of his, like, true voice, right? Like, you could hear the way he was kind of talking in his inner monologue was a lot more sort of dark and dangerous. Very, like, again, less happy-go-lucky. And less like a big silly giant, more sinister. And so, yeah, I think, like, he is, as you said, like, he was kind of in the tank for the Jomsvikings.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when Thor's left, that was like a big, like, knock to his indoctrinated thinking. And then seeing Canute come and have the same way of talking and the same look in his eye, and the same, like, oh, I'm not going to use a sword even though you're using violence against me. That was the last, that was like the straw that broke the camel's back. I think by him submitting to Canute, and he has submitted, right? He's like, I'm going to follow you.
I'm going to fight King Soen anyway, so I might as well.
Mm-hmm. I think it could be more than that too. Like, I mean, I think that's an excuse you can tell yourself, but I think he has thrown off now fully that indoctrination that you're talking about. I think he really does want to know now, because he's like, I deeply regret not following Thor's.
Well,
I want to know what it is to be a true warrior.
I actually put up a poll asking a question about this. So let me ask you, Doc. If Forkel ever finds out what Thor's interpretation of a true warrior was, which is someone who doesn't need to fight, someone who doesn't need a sword, how do you think he'd react to that?
Well, he got a taste of it, right? When Thorkell pulled his axe out, and he was like, "Where's your sword?" And Thor said, "I don't need it."
But he did. We never see his reaction to that beyond him simply, well, being knocked out. Like, what does mm-hmm. he think of that philosophy? What does
I know
he think of
that? It's.
That, I yeah. think, would be difficult for him to stomach, because he's...
It's going to be interesting.
Like, he might get onto board with it in the end, but bear in mind, mm-hmm. he spent his whole life fighting in war and loving every second of it, and indeed the show has gone to great lengths to show all the good stuff he's reaped from that. Like, all the food and all the glory and all that, you know? Of yeah. all the characters in the show, like, Forkel is the one who's had the least amount of difficulty. He's had the least, like, you know, problems to deal with. He's had the mm-hmm. least suffering. He's enjoyed practically every second of it. This is part of why he comes across as so playful, because he genuinely is having a great time. So if he then found out, this man you respect is the only warrior in the land who is better than you, he thought that all of this was complete bullshit, and it was better just to go live a life somewhere not here, which, by the way, goes back to the episode one title, Iceland, where he was just a dirt farmer. You know, I don't think Forkel would be able to quite process it at first, like maybe later. Indeed, think about why Thorfinn doesn't tell Forkel the truth. Because can you imagine Thorfinn telling Forkel, oh yeah, he just, like, you know, spent most of his time, like, herding sheep in Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
Forkel would just be looking and be like, no.
Yeah,
no,
it's interesting to think about.
No, mm-hmm. don't believe it. Don't believe it. You're lying. You're lying, kid. Your dad was a great warrior. You mean to tell me he wasn't, like, you know, conquering Iceland for himself and ruling over it like a king, like he deserved? No, he really just did raise sheep. That's all he did. And that's when Forkel's brain just explodes.
And yet, he's probably... like, he probably understands what Thor's meant better than anyone else. Just, I think that line that he talks about, it doesn't matter where a warrior's body is, what matters is where their soul is.
Well, that ties back to his
idea. I think he's really getting at something.
Well, that ties back to his idea of Valhalla, because that's where he wants his soul to go in the end. It just happens to be with him right this second. So he's wondering, did Thor's soul go to somewhere else, like that may not be Valhalla, but still gave him peace? And given how much respect he had for the man, maybe that then is the, you know, the thing that opens the door to him accepting this new perspective. I mean,
I'm not sure I agree with that, because he did say, so let me piece together this picture. So he says, right, Thor's, his soul, has gone somewhere else to learn what it means to be a true warrior. He said, mm-hmm. This has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And... didn't. So I think that he probably thought that had happened when he quote unquote died, right? Like when he faked his death and then he left. so he would have still been alive, so it doesn't really have anything to do with Valhalla. Does this make sense?
I was thinking more maybe his idea of when his soul left him was probably when he, you know, left the Jomsvikings. Left the
mm-hmm. That's what I mean. Yeah. That's what I mean. That, like, he... Yeah, so it's not like... it doesn't. It's not to do with Valhalla, necessarily. Well,
death. I would argue it is, because that is what Forkel has spoken about great length in the previous episodes as his ultimate end goal. And given that Fors was a part of the same unit, the Jomsvikings, would it not be reasonable to assume that prior to his change of heart, that was also probably his end goal? As it was for a lot of Norse warriors? So, in other words, if he no longer seeks that end goal, what's the new one?
Yeah, I think there is a new one. I think it's not Valhalla. I think, like,
That's my point, though, yeah.
He's learned to be a new warrior already, and so he's leaving the Jomsvikings.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so... basically, yeah, I don't know. I think that there's a lot... I think that there's a lot to that line, and this is, like, another instance. I mean, the show has done this numerous times, but like gesturing towards a more spiritual kind of life, or maybe like meaning or purpose, or kind of a higher way of living, being outside of purely materially existing and the physical realm, that there's something to do with the soul, to do with the mind and spirit that's out there. And yeah, I think like everyone is still like kind of grappling with it, or like a lot of the main characters are like, how do we relate to this?
Yeah,
you know.
Well, I think everyone's kind of got an end goal in mind at this point, but the question that we always have to keep ourselves in the show is the end goal for the best that they have at mm-hmm. the moment? I mean, Fors clearly had his, like, you know, midlife crisis, his moment where his faith, as it were, not in the Christian sense, but perhaps the Norse mythological right. sense, was shaken, and he thought, no, this is not right for me, I need to do something else. And Thorfinn, while not a crisis of faith so much, his end goal is murder the fuck out of Askeladd. And as I've said before, what happens after he attains that goal, or conversely, what happens after that goal is taken away from him? And maybe the question, maybe the distinction doesn't matter, because the end result is the same. It leaves him with nothing. I mean, there's that old line, like, the hunter's nothing without the hunt, so... in fact, that's even mentioned in this episode, funnily enough, isn't mm-hmm. it? The hunter is nothing without the prey.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. All right, what's your next discussion point?
Okay, let's talk about Freya of all things, because Freya is mentioned specifically in this episode, and I think this is a neat little bit of foreshadowing. So I actually looked up Freya on Wikipedia before. Who is Freya, you might wonder to yourself.
The best Final Fantasy IX character.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, except for mm-hmm. Vivi.
Oh, that's true. Vivi's pretty rad.
Vivi's pretty rad.
Yeah.
But okay, if you you know, haven't read Neil Gaiman's Norse Mythology, or haven't played God of War 4, or generally not au fait on Norse mythology in general, Freya is one of the Vanir, if I remember correctly. So not of the same group mm-hmm. of gods as Odin, for example, who's part of the Aesir. Indeed, Thor is mentioned when compared to Forkel by some of his men, who are rushing over like they've just, you know, late to a concert or something. Oh shit, bro, I'm going to lose my seats. I need to get up to the front row. Yeah. It just makes me wish there was that Monty Python, like, you know, Colosseum vendors selling like ox's noses, stoat's tongues, all that. Yeah.
Totally.
Exactly. So Freya is the Norse goddess, at least as some interpretations go, of fertility, sex, life, you name it, nature, blah de blah de blah. But that's the most common understanding that we have of it. I mean, when I played World of Warcraft, there was a boss named Freya, and Freya was all about plants and shit. So fair enough. But I wouldn't take that by the... don't use World of Warcraft for anything, by the way. Except as a springboard onto other things, but I'll be talking about that in a different podcast in a little while. Anyway, but Freya is also known for being involved with war and death, particularly as the patron of the Valkyries. So here's the thing, right? We've seen Canute thus far be very, very timid and placid, very reserved, you know, meek even, I would argue.
Mm-hmm.
But all of the things that Canute has done has been in the service of, like, life and living, like cooking, cultivating plants, living as a farmer. Indeed, a farmer's son is what Ragnar described him as. But now I think we're going to see the other side of that Freyr comparison, which is war and death. Because when Freyr got pissed off various times, she let her wrath be known. So I think this is a neat little bit of foreshadowing for people in the know as to what's going to happen to Canute now, where he's going to shift away from being that more, like, you know, known for life and nature and all that kind of stuff, and more towards the war and death side of thing. So again, kudos to Vinland Saga and Mikosa Yukimura for mining the Norse mythology elements appropriately, I would argue. I mean, it's all well and good to, like, you know, start dropping names every single time that you get the opportunity to do so and reference every Norse myth you can. But you're not, you know, filling in a history test here. It's actually better to use them to, you know, help develop character. And I think that that dichotomy there of life versus death really helps, like, you know, build on what's happened to Canute and what his future's going to be.
Yeah. With Canute, I mean, that's a really good... So thank you for bringing that up. That's a really good insight, actually. And my point is kind of along... without the mythological tie-in, kind of a similar vein. I always find it really interesting when you have... this happens a lot with antagonists. You have... characters who have lofty ideals, kind of grand ambitions, and those ambitions are very, very pure. And Canute is this, right? Like, he has his very, this kind of total, all-encompassing view of the world, God's relationship to it or non-relationship to it, what love is, and human nature and how that fits in the picture. And again, this is a very pure view, but in order to kind of realize his grander vision, he's got to take some very, like, human steps to get there. He wants to make an omelet. And omelets don't just appear out of thin air. You have to break some eggs to do it. And so, you know, he clearly thinks, like, battle for its own sake is just meaningless exercise. But he's going to have to, as you said, like, employ a lot of people in battles. He's going to have to do his own fair share of fighting to
take the throne away.
He's going to have to take the...
yeah, because there's only so far that you're, like, you know, talking will get you. I mean, he's talked his way out of this one, certainly. but if he hadn't been able to get Thorkell and his men on board, do you really think Canute was going to go marching up to King Sewin's, like, camp and go, like, "Father, eat shit"?
No,
he wasn't really,
right?
He wasn't going to do that, was he?
I don't think he believes he would have to, but yes, I totally agree with you.
It's a pragmatic thing. Like, he does need, you know... warfare, like, you know, can be an ugly necessity, I suppose.
Yeah, well, this is the part. So this is what's interesting about very kind of idealistic characters to me, is like how they end up justifying these actions that, when committed outside the bounds of their ideals, are committed not in service of kind of getting them to where they want to go, they will be like, these are bad. Like, how, like, what's the justification for all this killing and for this fighting that will happen?
And a myth that may or may not exist. That's a great reason to do it, isn't it?
And then how, and then once they have, you know, power, once Canute has power, what will be, like, how will he then treat those things? Like, then how will he view fighting, battle, and everything? I guess, like, it's all... I guess it's different for him in some ways, because rather than, like, have a belief in, like, some kind of objective principles or kind of an ethical code, he's very much like, I will decide that. The code is me, right? The measuring stick and the canon is
me. I am the law!
So I'm gonna give meaning to all these things. And... Yeah, right. So like, so Sophie and Masa both are saying versions of what a lot of people usually say, right? The means justify the ends, or I'm doing this for the greater good.
The greater good.
And it's like very, it's those trite, right? That kind of justification.
You can say that about anything.
You could. You definitely can. And like,
I mean, I ended up sleeping on my roof last night for the greater good.
For the greater good.
Not because I was a drunken wreck.
Mm-hmm. I guess, like, I'm always, I don't know if disappointed is the right word, but, like, yeah, just seeing characters with these incredibly grand visions and lofty ideals and these things that they want to put into action, right? That doing that always involves something that goes against those ideals. It never fails. And I'm just curious to see like how it plays out, how Canute deals with it, not just externally, but internally too. Because I think, you know, he doesn't want people to die anymore. Like, he's sick of it. Like, he hates this kind of tragedy.
So
that, like,
pointless.
That the whole fucking world, and we share that because we've been privy to so much of it throughout the show. Like, there's so much needless war and killing for the sake of killing, and like just pointless like grabs for power that end up not meaning anything, and people's lives are cheap. And yet, like, he's got to do that to try to create this world that he wants to create. And I guess it just goes back to like something we've mentioned on here before. Like, is it possible to create the ideal society without resorting to those kind of means?
Tune in next time and we'll give you a 2-hour long definitive answer to that question, folks. Sorry. No, I hear you on that. And we've just got to think about Canute himself as a character. Like, you know, can he, with everything that's happened to him, like, be better than his father?
Mm-hmm.
Because indeed, that seems to be the, you know, the common element between him and Thorfinn. And you might say, well, how can Thorfinn be better than his father when his father was, you know, wanted to espouse a pacifist ideology? And
well, I know how you think he goes.
I know what you. Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm the dark horse of this show, and I've got the grey morality going on here, you know. But we'll see. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But like I say, you know, the Freya comparison. We're going to see some, maybe see some fucked up shit come from Canute. And here's the thing. If he does do some fucked up shit, commits a couple of war crimes maybe, you know, all that sort of, you know, wonderful Saturday morning stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't mind that happening, because it could very well be a great story point for him where he then realizes, wait, what have I done? Like, my hands are stained with the blood of thousands.
I hope that's what happens. Like, I hope that he's not also a robot about it. And just like, well, it's just,
would Canute, would Canute pass the Turing test now? There's a question. I would argue in the earliest episodes he appears in, I would argue he wouldn't. Because he doesn't fucking talk. Oh, shit.
This is like the burden that people who make, that build these kind of things have to bear. And yeah, I mean, I just...
Heavy is the crown that goes on the head.
I know, and like, yeah, that's what I want to see. It sounds awful, but like, yeah, that's what I like to see from him. Is like, I want to see it tearing him up inside. I don't want him to just be like, yes, like, of course this is what we're going to do. Like, I want him to be like wounded and everything, and then you pass on the kingdom to your successor who never has to do any of that shit, who just keeps things running. Like, you bear all the sin and all the awfulness, and you take that with you to the grave. And you set it up. So this is me as a dad, right? That's me as like my fatherly instinct.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I do hope that we see that, like, whatever Canute sort of chooses to do to make his kingdom, mm-hmm. that he's not, less human.
I agree. Over to you, Doc. Have you got a talking point to bring up?
And we kind of talked about a couple of the things I wanted to talk about, honestly.
I stole your notes. I flew over yesterday, snuck into your office without you even realizing, nicked them and was back on a plane here. And I arrived just 10 minutes before we started. And I'm not even jet lagged at all, folks. I'm just a miracle worker.
The sad thing is you missed, I sent you a text that said I faxed them to you. So you didn't need to do all that.
You used a fax machine in 2019?
I'm like a Premier League football club, still using a fax machine in 2019.
Okay, fax machine. What are you going to do next? Send me a telegram with when we're next hosting our, 400th, subscriber anniversary. Master of Martial Arts, stop.
The smoke signal, yeah.
So the beacons have been lit. Oh, fuck me.
That's my favorite thing about a transfer deadline day in the UK, like the British football clubs or English football clubs. It's like, it's like 2 a.m. British time and the deadline had already passed, but we've got a fax that had tried to have gone through before the deadline, but it got, fucked up. But I see it here, so it says, so the deal is now gone through. I'm like, why are we sending faxes?
I don't usually, if ever, talk about my work in public for a variety of reasons. I'll just say this fax is one of the banes of my existence at my workplace. And the sooner that every fax machine gets shot into the sun, the better. If you're still using it, fucking stop. Jesus Christ.
Just scan and email that shit. Create a system.
Yeah. Or I will fax you a scan of my fist and you can then scrunch up to a ball and put yourself in the face with it for using such a piece of shit technology that's just completely out of date.
Why don't you,
these Premier League fuckers, send the transfer documents on a fucking carrier pigeon? Fly, Artemis, fly! Let us buy this player from this club.
Oh, to send off my dark wood elf on horseback to light the torches, to light the beacons of Gondor.
All right, okay, moving away from facts. So yeah, do you have any talking points, Doc? Apart from facts, I have one more. Okay. I have one more. All right, so let's talk. If there's one thing about Vinland Saga that you and I were discussing pre-cast is that there's a lot of points it repeats over and over again, and often in different ways. Where if we were doing this as a retrospective podcast where it was just one of our 3-hour ones, we could probably say, here's a thing and here's how it appears in X, Y, Z, so on and so forth. And one of the things that reappears this time around through the flashback with Forkel and Forzen, and also continuing the fight between Forkel and Forfinn, is the idea of war destroying families and turning them against each other. Because here's the thing, right? Do you not find it very, very sad that Forkel weeps about Forz's death because he didn't get the chance to fight him? As opposed to, he's my family member and he's dead. Is that not really, really grim when you think about it? Now,
I mean, yes. Yes, definitely.
I mean, we could argue, although there's no real hint of it, that maybe Forkel is lying when he says that, and maybe a little tinsy little part of him right there, with his third lung or whatever, because he's just a fucking mutant. Still his heart still beats a little bit for the loss of his nephew-in-law. But then of course, Forz himself, I mentioned that shot before where he says what it means to be a true warrior. Now Forz says that is because he doesn't need to fight. He doesn't need to use a sword. But I think there's a second meaning to that he might not have elaborated on so much, which was he found something he wanted to fight for finally that was very personal for him, to care for his family. And it's not just a question of fighting in wars, but doing what is necessary to protect them. That's why he's taking Helga and Ylva away to Iceland to get them away from all of this awful shit.
I've been so curious why he doesn't mention that, because I kept thinking, it's what you said, that will be what it's about somehow. The sword that protects is the strongest sword or whatever. But he's staying on message the whole time. Weapons, you don't need them. Don't need a sword. True warrior, no sword.
Which is why he still kept one in a chest in Iceland.
Well, hey, like you said, I mean, he's a human, right? I mean,
he's not an idiot. He was naive, I would argue.
Well, he has his things that he thinks are true, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he's, but he can't bear to let go of the past or his weapons, you know, just like you could be a nonviolent sort of person, but then when it comes to your family safety, you know, you could, I don't know, keep a small cache of weapons in the safe in your home. Not speaking from personal experience or anything like that.
Oh, I totally know you've got like the basement from Tremors in your house. The one that's got enough, the ones that have guns to outfit a small militia.
I do not own a gun. Despite having fired one, I've never owned a firearm. I have a baseball bat or two, but I do not own a gun.
Is it a baseball bat that turns into a gun? Does the end of it pop off?
Yes, it's a gun, but it only fires tennis balls. So
that's okay. That's okay. And then there's also other things in this episode. Like, let's go back to Thorfinn not telling Thorkell about his father's history. Is that, again, because, like, you know, he's embarrassed to say that his father just turned into a farmer when he was really a great, great warrior? Because if you remember, the whole reason he wants to fight Askeladd in a duel and simply not kill him in his sleep is because of that sense of honor tied into the idea of his father being a great warrior, and he can't pass or process the fact that he was beaten. Like, hey, he was such an incredible soldier, you know, no man on earth could beat him. Oh, he got beat. That doesn't compute. That doesn't work. I don't get this. No, I can't handle this. That's why I've got to beat Askeladd and prove that, you know, it was just a fluke.
How do you think Thorkell... Does Thorkell know Askeladd killed him?
I don't think he did, because I could say this, right? Given how like sore Thorkell is about not having had the chance to fight Force one last time.
Yeah.
I know full well that if he found out, he would have turned Askeladd into, like, you know, ribeye steak.
Totally.
He would, like, Askeladd, you denied me
so
the chance. You denied me the chance to fight Force again, and you did it for gold?
Man,
what
we needed
the fuck? He would have smushed his head. He'd have taken his head and smushed it like a grape.
We needed a cut from when, you know, he says, I'm not going to tell you. You know, screw you, Thorkell, when Thorfinn says that. We needed a quick cut to Askeladd going, thank Christ, I live.
I didn't realize we were going to see history's first documented instance of sweating bullets, but here we are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh my
so
God.
Look at the absurdity of all this family situation that's going on here, where, like, two different generations, three different generations throughout the course of the episode, if you count the flashbacks, have been aligned against each other for various reasons, all relating to the war that's been going on for so long and the culture that's so ingrained in them all of honor, tradition, and military service. Mm-hmm. And it's all left them with basically nothing of worth. Thorfinn, he's got nothing but the clothes on his back, and all he's done for the past 8 years, or however long it is have a murder boner for this guy. Great. What a fucking wonderful life that turned out to be. Fors is dead for all his, you know, processations that. And even before then, he realized how awful it was and actually took steps to get away from it. And Thorkell, he's enjoyed it, don't get me wrong. But he hasn't, as you say, been satisfied by it in the end because he couldn't figure out what a true warrior was. Mm-hmm. Like, he's had hints shown to him that there's a better way, or at least a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all he has for it now is, like, you know, sadness he never got to fight for. It's like, it was all worthless. And he's now actively trying to kill his fucking grandnephew. It's insane when you think about it. None of this shit should be happening. Yeah, none of this shit should be happening.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know about you, Doc, but when you're older and you have, like, a grandnephew of your own, are you going to, like, you know, go traipsing across America to murder him with two-hand axes? I mean, you've got a couple of years now to get really, really swole. You've got a couple of years to get really, really swole and beefy, like Thorkell is.
How old is Thorkell?
He's in his 50s.
What?
Yes, he's in his 50s.
God. That's amazing.
He really is Big Boss, because Big Boss could keep fighting until he was like his fucking 70s.
Like,
and he's still the greatest soldier ever.
Just old people.
He really is. Again, Vinland Saga, hitting the same beats that it's done previously, but it's doing so in new and interesting ways, and continues to bring the absurdity of this whole nonsense to the fore. And I really, really like all of this. Even Thor's a character whose purpose was I mean, you and I joked way back in episode 4 that Force basically served the Obi-Wan Kenobi role of the mentor slash father figure who dies early to set the protagonist child character onto their path. Like, you know, we could joke about the trope of that all day, but they keep bringing him back, and they do so with new and interesting perspectives, things that, like, you know, flesh out and enrich the relationships between the characters even after he's long since, you know, been useful. I mean, hell, Forkel actually, he actually kind of his own way, Metacritic's his own, like, you know, Metacriticizes the show by saying, hey, the body might be gone, but he's still, you know, it doesn't matter anymore. He's still relevant. Yeah, and that's true in the show. Yeah, he criticizes his own show.
Oh, shit.
Can you imagine Forkel being a film critic? Bored now, Axe, bro.
Where's the film Thorkel Twitter account? We have the film Crit Hulk.
Yeah, it would be like that, wouldn't it? It really would. It would be like constant use of caps lock, but it would also be really insightful.
Yes, it would be. It would be hilarious and very good.
Oh dear. Alright, well that's my last question.
How do you think Thorfinn is feeling about everything that's kind of played out in front of him? Because I don't think I have a great handle on much about him currently these days. Like, besides, of course, we all know he wants to kill Askeladd. We've known it forever. But, like, he's hearing about his dad and his mom from his great uncle. And we see his face soften a little bit. And he is seeing Canute this... I mean, he's seen him in front of his eyes go from a shrinking violet to, like, you know, an incredibly bold leader. Like, how do you think he's feeling about everything that he's hearing and experiencing now? I mean, do you think hearing about his dad that way, like, makes him feel better and more proud of his dad? Do you think he wants to forget about his dad? Like, how do you think he's feeling?
I think it's maybe perhaps a bit of both, but maybe that's what makes him so confused and angry. Like, he has... You know, on the one hand, he's all like, you know, hey, you know, I remember all the good things my dad gave me. And on the other hand, my dad failed and, you know, and all that. The problem is, as I said before, I think that the show struggles with a sense of focus on which character it wants to develop. And I don't think it handles necessarily giving more enough time to Thorfinn versus Canute, because it feels to me like we've gone very lopsided. Like, it was all Thorfinn, and then Thorfinn kind of became more of a passive... not passive agent, more like a background character, I would argue.
Mm.
Whereas currently, Canute has taken center stage. So I can speculate. And I think that because he is still young and he's still, like, you know, very much like filled with hatred for Askeladd, that his emotions and all that, like, he probably feels both, I would say, and they're kind of smashing against him, and he doesn't really know what to think. But that's the best I can speculate on. And I still think the show and the material would have been better overall if it was better at managing or doing time management with how much it gives to Thorfinn versus Canute. And when I say that, I mean, of course, also with bringing Canute in much earlier in his own plot line, which would then bring them together.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, still would be the way that this material would have been better handled, in my opinion, rather than, here's a person that's suddenly important, because oftentimes that, to me, reads as, oh, the existing character, I'm kind of done with them. Mm-hmm. Which obviously isn't the case.
No.
But it's the optics of it, of how it appears to us as the audience, that can be quite limited. And that's not to say that things aren't happening with Thorfinn right now, but I think, again, what the show is trying to use him to do is to make a broader point about the absurdity of warfare and martial conflicts, rather than it being necessarily a personal arc for him. That, I think, is what's happening here. The show is very macro in its nature, rather than micro.
Yeah.
And that's why it makes it difficult to read what his own thoughts are, because I don't think the show's paying attention to that necessarily, because it's got a different game plan in mind, which is fine. That's absolutely fine. But as I say, we're laboring under this impression of the show that it gave us at the very beginning, which was, this is Thorfinn's story. Whereas really, it's the story of one person in a much wider world.
Yes.
And how that world is pretty effed up, to be quite honest.
It's Norway's story.
It's Norway's story. Norway's saga.
I guess if I had to speculate, like, I think he's probably, like, he being Thorfinn, is probably pretty single-minded still about Askeladd, you know? And
entirely, I would argue.
Putting everything else on the back burner as much as he can. I mean, I don't think... I want to know how he thinks about and feels about Canute, because that's, I mean, that's the best ship. Okay, let's be honest. But I just don't know that he thinks about him very much at the moment. You know, I think maybe he'll have the opportunity to do more thinking and be more reflective later. But yeah, I think probably for now, he's still pretty Askeladd focused. And everything else is kind of secondary. But I'm hearing about his dad, I'm sure he felt pretty vulnerable for a moment there. But then he's just like, no, I can't feel this way. I will not allow myself to feel this way. We need to move on now.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all the talking points that I have anyway for this episode. But we do have one patron question.
Oh, good. Hold on just a moment here. Let me restart this video call because you've been dropping out a little bit.
Okay. All righty then.
Okay.
Okay. So our Patreon question this week comes from Blinkaji, who has been our long-standing like source of info on the actual source material for the manga. I would actually be remiss if I didn't bring up certain things that before we get into this question that he noted, such as how there were certain changes in the from the manga to the anime, in particular that flashback scene where Forkel is much quicker on the uptake of Thor's leaving, and. I'm actually of the opinion that change was for the better, in my opinion, because I think it ties into that idea that I had about, like, indoctrination. That being said, that's just my reading on it, though. And that may not have been the intent of the creators of the show, and it may not indeed be the best thing for the show. But I think it helps sell what's going on here. Also, I should note, by the way, that the actual creators of Vinland Saga have tweeted out that they are, for the next five episodes, deviating a little more from the final episodes. What form that will take, I don't know. But I, again, as a big proponent of people like having more flexibility in adaptation, I think that that's a good thing that they're at least being able to do that. I'd rather say, you know, sorry, I'm getting tongue tied. I would rather, like, you know, a show fail creatively because they tried to do something different, rather than it fail creatively because they had no latitude to make any changes whatsoever and they were too strict to the letter of the text itself. So even if, like, these next five episodes completely bottom out and turn into a massive dumpster fire, which I very highly doubt, by the way, but even if that happens, I at least will appreciate them having the ability and the will to try and being allowed to do so. So, good shit. All right, anyway, patron question. Patron question from Blinkaji goes something like this. Where was the Bjorn? And what do you guys reckon he was up to this episode? All right.
The great Bjorn.
So, I have two answers to this, actually, because I love coming up with headcanons for shit like this. I love these kind of questions.
Okay.
The first thing I'm going to say is that he's in rehab. He's in mushroom rehab. You know, he's tied up into a chair and he's having aversion therapy where he is being shown, like, you know, images of things like bunnies and flowers and whatnot. But then when a picture of a mushroom appears, he gets electroshocked.
Oh, my God.
That's my first thing on that. He's in rehab. And then the second reading I have is that Bjorn has been teleported to his version of Valhalla, which is, of course, the Mushroom Kingdom. So he's just making war on Toad and Toadette and all that, and he's having a great time.
Mm-hmm.
You can see Bjorn getting over that flagpole totally.
Oh, yep.
The damn. Penny just dropped you, didn't it? Oh. It really just hit you hard then. I mean, if Doc is a robot, he's having a hardware error there. Do you want us to make a crash report, Doc?
Something about a kernel. I don't know.
I could, like, someone draw me fan art of Bjorn just taking a giant bite out of Toad's head.
Yukinon, there is waifu Thorkel art. I believe I've retweeted it before.
Oh my god.
So that's
when's Thorkel in Fate Grand Order?
needs
I mean, to happen they are running out of mythological figures to use at this point.
They
have to start mining some other shit from somewhere. I'm surprised they haven't actually gone for more Norse stuff, come to think of it. So I don't know when it'll happen, but I'm wagering we're going to get, you know, a sexy lady Forkel, you know, including the beachwear one. That'll happen eventually as well.
Anime surely has done Vikings in space before.
Wasn't that technically Legend of the Galactic Heroes in some way?
Kind of. That was more like
the axes.
That was more like Nazis, right?
I suppose, yeah.
But there was, you know, Odin is an anime about space and people in uniform. As to what else is about, I couldn't tell you, despite having seen it, because it's so freaking boring.
Can I just say that if there is a Vikings in space anime, then they just need to be in the longboats like they normally are and look like they usually do, but with no explanation of how it works, like how they're in a vacuum. They're just literally rowing through space at light speed.
Yep.
So do you have an answer for Blinkarji's question? Do you have a headcanon of your own as to where Bjorn has ended up?
Where was he this episode?
Nowhere.
I'm going to say that he is off screen gathering horses together, gathering sufficient stock of mushrooms, you know, maybe like looting bodies, getting armor, basically preparing a royal transport for His Highness. Again, stocked with enough mushrooms to get him all the way to Gainsborough. I think I'm going to go with that, because
that's the much more sense.
You've taken the fun answers.
You can go with your own fun answers. You could say that, like, you know, Bjorn has just woken up at the start of Elder Scrolls V Skyrim. He's on the wagon.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I've just had the most amazing thought. What if I did a Let's Play of Skyrim by play Bjorn in it? Where Bjorn, the Dragon Bjorn. There we go. That's it.
Dragon Bjorn. That checks out.
I've just dropped the mic on this entire show.
Yeah.
Admittedly, involves Todd Howard, so maybe I shouldn't be so proud of that. Fuck's sake. Anyway, Todd, if you want to send me your Bethesda money, because I know that you know you like to pay people off for that shit, then send it my way. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the Patreon questions. Thank you very much, Blinkarji, for throwing them there. If you want to ask us questions about episodes as we do them week on week, then feel free to take a look at our Patreon. That's patreon.com/warrior-show. If you subscribe to the, is it the $3 tier or higher, I believe? You can ask us questions about both Vinland Saga and also Kabukicho Sherlock and other shows we'll be doing in the future. You can indeed help decide what shows we'll be doing in the future, because that will come around at the end of this year when we decide if we're going to continue Kabukicho or move on to a different show. And if you pay enough money, were you not a fan of the itchy crotch jokes in this week's episode? Or have you not seen it yet? Ple-M. Ple-M. I don't know what Ple-M is. Ple-M.
For you it's not backwards. For the stream it is backwards. Says help me. Help me, because I've been kidnapped by... You've ruined the bit. You've ruined it.
Look, Doc, you need to change your language pack. You need to get it back to English US. I know that you're struggling with your newfound robot nature here, but you need to accept it.
Updates are hard.
Have you had the service pack yet?
Updates are hard. No, I need to get XP professional.
XP God, like, you really are going to start malfunctioning. That's long since our service. But yeah, do feel free to check out our Patreon. There's plenty of other benefits as well. Now, with that, I suppose we should actually wrap up by looking at the polls as they stand now. There were 5 this week. I've actually had my creative...
Oh, we did get a question in chat.
Yes.
That they would like us to answer. So, what do we think Canute and Thor's have in common? Why do they have similar eyes? This is by AI... Or is it AL? I don't know. The font is not good to me. _
I know you'd recognize them over AI if you saw it.
I know. I'm trying to not reveal their identity. No, so why do we think Thorkell looked in Canute's eyes and said, you have similar eyes? Well,
I think it's a sense of determination.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was no turning like Thor's around, and certainly Canute doesn't like buckle in front of like 4Kel, like even when he gives him like the, you know, the Saitama punch.
Right. I think it is that they're both great individuals. I think, like you said, that they're both determined to achieve, that they both have very strong and like clear visions for the future that they want to make. And I think that those, the futures involve sort of the eradication, if not like very minimized, like violence. I think they want to make these ideal futures for people. They want to make their kingdoms, like you have said, Shadon, and they want to make them free from what they see as like needless war. They don't find a need for weapons and war in their kind of utopic worlds. And so I think those are the similarities, probably.
Yeah, I would agree. All right, then. So let's close out by looking at the polls, then. So there were 5 this time around. I actually got some decent mileage out of this episode, all not least of which is questioning Doc's robotic nature. Is he more machine than man? I'm sure we'll find out in the coming week. But anyway, Vinland Saga episode 19, poll number 1. Could Doc pass the Turing test? Nope. Lol. 100%. Banks are right. You all know. You all know. You're all Blade Runners. Well done. Just please, please don't have like crippling, like, you know, existential crises whenever you see unicorns. Just say.
I've episode seen. 19... Oh. I can't remember the speech. I was going to try to
do that. Oh, the most, the best scene in the entire film by the best actor in the entire film. Rest in peace, Rutger Hauer.
You are missed.
Mm-hmm. Episode 19, poll number 2. What are the odds of Shaden waking up on the roof of his house after getting obliterated on booze the night before? There were 2 answers for this one. The first one, which came in at 40% at the moment, is 100%. And answer number 2, at 60%, is 99%. So I'm glad that people like currently are giving me a little bit more credit. Like, they give me like long odds of not waking up on my roof in the morning when I get pissed. Thank you very kindly for everyone who voted for that answer. Now for a more serious poll. Number 3. If 4Kel ever found out about Force's perspective on what it means to be a true warrior, how would he react? 25% say he would lose his shit. 50% say given time he'd be okay. And 25% say he'd jump right on board. So we've got a little bit of a mix here so far, but mostly lean towards the it would take time, but he would get behind it in the end. Mm-hmm. Poll 4. When Askeladd said he once played shogi, he really meant 38% say chess. 0%.
No, that can't be true, though, because he says it's not like shogi because... Oh, wait a minute. No, they are the same. Fuck, God damn it. I fucked that up.
Do you need a memory upgrade, Doc? Do you want more RAM?
Many errors firing off. No, like, yeah, okay. Never mind.
Buy yourself an SSD for Christmas, my lad.
Because he says, if you take the king, you don't win. And that is what happens in chess and shogi. God damn it.
And then 0%...
Please fire me. Trade me in for a better model.
0% say Mahjong. 25% say League of Legends. And 37% say the current leader, Monopoly.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
I mean, Thorfinn's been trying to roll a double for ages to get out of Vengeance Jail. It just hasn't happened yet. And the final poll, episode 19, poll 5. Given his past duplicity... Now, there's a word of the day for you, folks. Should Canute have killed Askeladd at the end of the episode rather than making him his vassal? And currently, with 100% the lead, nah, he can be trusted. As opposed to the other answer of, hell yes, kill the motherfucker.
Wrong. He can't be trusted, but he is useful.
The thing is, he's like a snake, you know? You know, keep him as a pet all you want, but they can and will bite you if provoked. So, just saying. Anyway, thank you everyone who's taken part in the polls thus far. They will remain up for the week, so do feel free to check them out. Give them a retweet, send them to your friends, get all involved in the conversation. The right answer for the first one is, of course, that Doc would fail the Turing test. He's failed it many times already today. Otherwise, that brings us to the end of the episode, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, indeed. I guess we need to rate it still.
Shit, you're right. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. Yeah, so I'm gonna rate it... 4.25 gouged eyes out of 5.
Wow. So that's 2 blind people and one who's just slightly, you know, injured in one eye.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, lucky, like, lucky him.
Put the shampoo in his eye, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, no, no. I mean, I have, I once managed to, unfortunately, get, like, if it was mint shower gel in my eye. Oof. That shit burned.
Yeah, my shampoo is minty, and, like, just having it, like, around my eye, like, if it comes from my hair onto my forehead, my eyes start to be like, no, I mean, no,
I mean, screaming. My eye was, like, perfectly clean afterwards. It was great. right after the searing agony, like, subsided, it was fantastic. All right, so for my
could
part...
Could eat off that eye.
Really could have done. So for my part, like, I think, again, this episode, like, it continues the themes. It continues to do them in new and interesting ways with the existing characters. We've got the end game in sight. Things are starting to really kick into high gear, so that's good. I like the little details that happened here and there in the episode. So I'm actually going to break with the usual tradition and race it higher than Doc did.
I know you're doing that a lot lately.
It's a red letter day here, folks. Like, you know, take note here. in the end, I am going to give this episode 4.5 Forkel taking a sitting break out of 5. Because he just sits down. He just sits down mid-episode like, I need a seat. I need booze. And I get
let's
it for
talk.
Him. Let's, you know, Uncle Forkel's going to just have a quick sit-down chat with you. He's going to tell you the truth. Oh, thankfully he didn't make Thorfinn sit on his knee while he was doing that.
Pour yourself a cup of lemonade. Why do the story time?
Mm-hmm. All right, then. So, yeah, that's that, I believe.
Yeah. That brings us to the end of Kyoto United Front, episode 19 of Vinland Saga. Thank you, everybody out there, for tuning in.
Mm,
as Shadan said, you. If you would like to be a part of our community, oh, patrons, Waru Desho has a Patreon. It's patreon.com/Waru Desho. And we got 3 tiers, all budget-friendly, $2, $3, and $5. Go to the page, check it out. You know, if you just want to support us a little bit and, you know, get into the Discord, you know, you can get on the lower end of the tiers. But if you'd like to receive all kinds of bonus content, if you want to kind of help us in the process of shaping content, you will want to go to the higher end of those. And just to give a little brief sampling, like, we've got essays about audio essays of things like Tokyo Godfathers, Spider-Man. We've got stuff on Akiken. Stuff is forthcoming on all sorts. We're going to make an announcement on the After Hours podcast, which is our for all patrons. I'm going to be announcing what we're going to be doing for the holidays. Some awesome specials coming out for patrons first, mm-hmm. and eventually for everybody for the holiday season. Lots of good stuff to look forward to. But if you, you know, are not able to or don't want to support us financially, first of all, you're valid.
That's cool. That's cool.
We love you. There's all kinds of ways you can freely support us by, you know, reviewing and rating our pod on Apple Podcasts. That's still a place that people get podcasts. We also have a SoundCloud where you can follow us there and like our stuff, repost it, and share. Got Twitter, Gmail, Waruidesho. Search for that. You can get in contact with us. You know, whether you're watching this on demand or listening on demand, live, whatever, we love all of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much, everyone.
Mm-hmm. So, Shadan, if people want to get with you directly, you know, how would they go
about
doing
that? Well, when they phrase it like that, you know, you just need to buy me a decent pint first. Like, if you want to meet me in a bar somewhere and you want to get, you know, talking to me, you know, maybe get glamorous and all that, buy me, like, you want to get, you know, just get me a decent pint of lager first. If you buy me a shit pint of lager as a drink, that's a no-go. That's immediate write-off. Just say, no, I'm joking, of course, folks. If you want to find me, you can get me on Twitter at Shaden1010, and you can also find me similarly on Discord if you want to, you know, message me directly. Feel free to team me up about anything and everything. Just don't buy me shit beer.
Don't do that. Never a good thing.
Just saying.
And you can find me on Twitter at TheSubtleDoctor. Do at me about whatever. I'm always game to talk anime, manga, all sorts of assorted nerderies. And but with that, I think we're going to close it out. so that we can get to recording our after-hour show for today.
Hell yes.
For Shadon, I am the Subtle Doctor. This has been Watery Desh Show, and remember, embrace each other, everyone, to the ends of the universe.
Good night.